Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining. This is Robert Weissman. By my clock, it's 2:59. So if you're on now, you're early, which we appreciate. We will start in about 2 minutes. We'll indulge those who are a little bit slower to get on than you were. Now just 1 minute away. Anyway, thanks very much. We'll get started in just a moment. All right, everyone, let's get started. Thank you so much for joining. It's Robert Weissman, President of Public Citizen. You're on a call with our great supporters to talk about our new campaign to win Medicare for All. What we have in mind is for me to give you an overview of what we have in mind for our campaign plan, a little bit about the lay of the land on Medicare for All advocacy. I'll do that for about 15 minutes, and then we'll take questions for about 15 minutes. We will wrap this up in a half an hour. The way to give me a question is not to speak. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do that with this phone system, but to send me an email, which you can do directly to my account at rweissman@citizen.org. So it's rweissman@citizen.org. I will remind you of that later on in the call. If it's the case that you have a question but you're not able to send an email while the call is going on, it's completely fine to send me something after the call is over about Medicare for All or anything else. You should feel free to communicate with me directly at any time. So that's the preliminaries, and let me just thank you again all for joining, and I'm going to dive right in and begin by elaborating a little bit more on the thank you. So If you were asked to join this call, it's because you've been a really strong supporter of what we do at Public Citizen. We wanted to have a real sort of limited access briefing for our best supporters to explain what we're doing and to ask for your help, but to really give you an insight into what we have planned. And I just want to go ahead and do that, but first, again, just tell you the support you give us makes all the difference. It really is the case that we can't do what we do without the backing that you provide. So thank you very much for that. All right, so Medicare for All. What are we talking about with Medicare for All? Why do we think it's worth advocating for what's in the Medicare for All proposal that's moving in Congress? What's our plan to win? Those are the things that I want to cover in just this 12 or 15 minute brief overview and conversation. Well, Medicare for All is exactly what it sounds like. It would provide Medicare for every person in America, not just those age 65 and over. It's actually expanded and improved Medicare for All, because the Medicare for All that would be available under the plans we're supporting would be better than what is now available to existing Medicare recipients. It would get rid of copays and deductibles. It would have complete prescription drug coverage. It would give you coverage for vision and dental and hearing. It would give also, crucially, coverage for long-term care and support. So whether you needed in-home care with a caregiver on a 24-hour-a-day basis or 12-hour-a-day basis, whether you need a nursing home care, things that are not now covered under Medicare would be covered under the proposals that work in. So that's what Medicare for All is, just definitionally. You know, why are we talking about it? Why do we think it's so important? Why are we advocating for it? The simple answer is that the healthcare system we have now, even with the expansion of coverage that occurred through Obamacare, the existing system is a disaster. There is for some segment of the population very high quality care available, but we don't cover at all 30 million people. We have a number that's about double that who are underinsured, who they have insurance, but it's so limited, so flawed, that it doesn't really serve the job of insurance, which is to guarantee you, pay for your coverage when you're sick or ill or need to get preventative care. So now we're talking almost 100 million people. Then you have the people who are covered, who have some reasonable kind of insurance, but even most of us who have pretty good insurance from the private sector know that it is very frustrating. We know that we're often very limited on our choice of doctor. We know that treatments require pre-approval by insurance companies that seem obsessed with denying care that people need, that often have all kinds of irrational systems and policies that are actually designed not to ensure care but to deny it. So it doesn't work for people. And whether you have coverage or you don't have coverage, making it all even worse, it's our current system is outrageously expensive. We spend roughly twice as much on health care as other rich countries do on a per capita basis. It'd be one thing if our coverage was twice as good, but it's not twice as good. It's actually worse than what other countries get. And, of course, they're covering everyone while we're leaving so many people behind. So it's a system that's failed and that needs to be replaced. There are a lot of problems, of course, and a lot of public health problems in the country. But we trace the root of the problem with healthcare coverage to the private insurance companies. They actually have a business model that's based on denying people care, covering only some, and then covering inadequately those who are covered. If we want to make the system work, we need to get rid of the private health insurance companies. That's how we can get coverage and care for everyone who needs it. It also turns out that their policies of denying care, while they make them money, impose unbelievable costs on the overall system, because we've got these elaborate billing systems and all kinds of administrative costs that are imposed by the insurers on top of the overall health system. And those start to add up, like 20% of healthcare costs allocated to waste, profiteering, abuse, things that we could solve if we took our Medicare system and then moved to make that the system for everyone, if we had a Medicare for All system. So what we know is that with Medicare for All, we can cover everyone, we can give better coverage without all the frustrations and exclusions and everything else, and we can actually make our system vastly more efficient than it is now. So I think on the merits, at least from our point of view, it is not a close call. It is the morally right thing to do to be able to provide health care to everyone as a matter of right without regard to their ability to pay. And it's the economically efficient thing to do. First, much more important, but the second matters. Like, it does matter how much you pay because society can only spend so much on health insurance. So that's to us the what's so important about Medicare for All, what makes the case for Medicare for All. And we think the merits argument is really strong. But, we've been around the block a few times here at Public Citizen. We know how policymaking works. From our point of view, when we work on an issue, we always have to win the merits argument. But that's only the first step. We have to do the organizing so that we're actually able to make the right thing the real thing. And oftentimes even pursuing the right thing requires us first to make it seem a legitimate part of the policy debate. So that's what we're setting out to do. So I want to turn next to talking to you about our plan to drive forward, to build support for Medicare for All and to win Medicare for All, talk to you a little bit also about what the political context is. But before I go ahead and do that, I just want to remind you again, if along the way you've got questions for me about this, it's just send me an email and I'll answer them in the second half of the call at rweissman@citizen.org, rweissman@citizen.org. So what we know is that to win Medicare for All, we're going to have to build enormous public support because we're taking on the health insurance companies. We're envisioning a plan that would drastically reduce the profits available and profiteering by the pharmaceutical industry that would run head-on into the for-profit hospital. So these are very powerful industries, and we're talking about not marginal things, but serious threats to their business model, and in some cases even putting them out of business, displacing them altogether. So winning means building really broad support across the country. And we've made unbelievable strides in that regard with Medicare for All in the last several years, with now 70% of Americans saying they support a Medicare for All system. But being broad is just part of it. It has to be really deep. It has to be, we have to have a real movement that supports and demands Medicare for All. Members of Congress have to feel that their constituents are demanding this, will hold them accountable, and won't settle for anything less than Medicare for All. Well, building that movement, that's a big piece of work, and that's what's in the campaign plan that you've either just received in the mail from us or will shortly. To take on such a big project, we reflected on what's worked well for us in the past, and we drew a lot on our campaign for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United, where we started out way weaker, actually, than we are right now in the Medicare for All campaign, but we were taking on a similarly bold idea that many people thought was either unreasonable or politically unrealistic. And we focused on trying to build a movement not in Washington, D.C., so not primarily focusing on lobbying, but first focusing on building grassroots support. And we used the vehicle of trying to win local and state resolutions calling for an amendment as a way to get people engaged in communities across the country. Many of you know about that. Many of you probably were involved in those efforts. We now have something, I think we just hit our 800th community passing a resolution supporting a constitutional amendment. We've got 20 states that have passed resolutions or the equivalent calling for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. That ended up turning into the political momentum that not just made this a realistic thing in Washington, D.C., something that was previously ruled or thought to be by conventional wisdom impossible. It put it in the center of debate. I think you're going to see pretty much every single Democratic presidential candidate supporting a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. Hillary Clinton did. I think we actually would have overturned the decision through the Supreme Court based on the work we had done if, in fact, Merrick Garland had been confirmed. Okay, of course, current political realities give us some big obstacles, but we showed that we could do something that people thought was impossible through this strategy. So we're going to try to do exactly that now with Medicare for All and get resolutions passed across the country calling for Medicare for All. That gives people, wherever you are, the ability to engage in this fight, whether you live in a district where your member of Congress is already on board for Medicare for All, whether you live in a district where your member of Congress seems unbelievably hostile to Medicare for All, whatever, everybody's able to get involved in this kind of thing. And then we turn that energy after winning the resolution, we use the resolution then to demand accountability from members of Congress and from senators. Look, your people, you've got a concrete manifestation of the local demand for this. Now it's time for you to get on board for Medicare for All. And the organizing and the collective action at the local level, that gives people the ability, that as they come together, they can then turn their attention to pushing their members of Congress. So that, I mean, that's really the sort of the plan in a nutshell. If you look through the material we sent, you see it's way more elaborate than that. We've got a whole congressional strategy built out. We're going to do huge amounts of research and fact sheets and social media and constant communication strategy. And a lot of those things are already beginning to get underway. But we're really starting to see, as we expected, that the strategy is really now in its early stages, already starting to catch fire. Last night, we held a teleconference town hall with Pramila Jayapal, the member of Congress from Seattle, who's the lead sponsor of Medicare for All in the House of Representatives. We had hundreds of people involved on that webinar. We've got almost 2,000 people who either joined one of our first two webinars or said they're going to listen to the recording and participate later on. We've got 150 people from around the country who've signed up to host or help host an organizing party, which is the launch for a local resolution. We're starting to reach out to those people individually on a one-on-one basis, one of our brand new organizers, get people the materials they need, help them do the planning and the outreach, working, pulling in not just people who are connected to Public Citizen, but with the allied groups that we're coordinating with on this. And it's really starting to catch on. We've already seen the first couple cities and towns across the country start to do this, just in response to the idea being spread around. And I think we're quickly going to be up in the dozens of resolutions that are getting passed. And I think momentum is going to continue to build and build. We are well staffed up now. We've got an extraordinary campaign coordinator working on this who's worked with us for a long time previously on trade issues. And we're prepared, and we're starting to see that things are really going to take off for us. So we're very excited about that. And it's happening at what's absolutely the right time for us, because the politics are lining up well for us additionally, so that we're seeing two things happen here in Washington, D.C. We're seeing a lot of enthusiasm in the House of Representatives. We're seeing more and more organizations jumping on board, including a lot of groups that we're reaching out to on a one-on-one basis to come and lend their support now, become part of the Coalition for Medicare for All. We just had last week the first hearing in Congress on Medicare for All, which was an unbelievably moving event. And the momentum is really palpable. And the second thing that's happening is also a good thing, which is that we're being attacked like crazy. And that's a sign that industry thinks this is a serious problem they've got to take. And we want them to feel this is serious, because it is, in fact, serious. The industry, the insurers and the hospitals have thrown together a front group to try to start attacking Medicare for All in a really aggressive way. They're starting to take out ads all over the place in Washington, D.C. We're seeing a lot of pieces appearing in the media saying, oh, your proposal is unreasonable, it costs too much, it'll be very disruptive. And we're excited about being attacked. Because, you know, if you think back to the old statement from Gandhi about how first you're ignored and then you're attacked and, you know, then you're laughed at and then attacked and eventually you win, we're quickly moving up the ladder of seriousness and impact. So, and of course, I guess the other piece of what's going on is not in Washington, D.C. politically, but in the presidential primaries, where we're seeing candidates just jumping on board the Medicare for All bandwagon, and that's really also furthering the energy that we've got going. So we're seeing, I think, this real convergence going on between momentum in Congress, momentum in the presidential race, and now this grassroots energy that we're beginning to harness in a really exciting way. Look, this is not a fight we win in 2-3 months, either than in a year. This is a years-long struggle. There are no illusions about that. But when you can feel this energy coming together, then you start to say, hey, yeah, this thing that people thought was impossible, not so much. When this idea that we do what's right and then make it real, that's what we're on track to do if we do the hard work. But no illusions about how hard the work actually is going to be, how long it's going to take, how much we have to invest, how much we have to be ready to respond to each of these attacks that come out. And of course, that's where you come in. We need you to join the local efforts. If that's a fit for you, let us know, and we'll get in touch. We'd love to have you help generate local resolutions. But we're also hoping you can give us financial support. We have an ambitious plan. Again, it's laid out in the material that you're receiving in the mail. We're trying to raise $1.8 million, just below $2 million, to drive this campaign forward at the scale we need to take on these super powerful industries and finally make healthcare a right. And we're pretty optimistic that we can get this thing done, not again, over a matter of years. But it's going to take us doing it the right way and doing it at the right scale. And we're really hopeful, on top of all the support you've given us in the past, that you can additionally give us some meaningful support to drive this campaign forward. So that's the overview. And just again, let me appreciate all you do for us. And I'll try to turn to some questions. For those of you who are still thinking, what was that email address again? It's rweissman@citizen.org, rweissman.org. I'm going to take a few questions right now. And, of course, if you've got questions later on, feel free anytime. Just let me know. One question we have is if that Medicare pays so low to hospitals that if we had Medicare for all, many hospitals would close. What's the response? I think the answer is if we move to Medicare for all, we're going to move to a different kind of payment system. So we're not paying hospitals and providers based on each person who gets treatment. We're giving them an overall budget to do the care that they do, to take care of the population that they take care of. And the whole point of the payment system is to give the decentralized healthcare providers the funding they need to do the job that we need them to do. So the analogy is if you think about a library. So libraries aren't paid for each book that gets checked out. The library gets a budget to do its job. We're going to pay hospitals a budget to do their job. And I think the whole point of Medicare for All system is to cover everybody, but to have a healthcare system that works. So if it's paying too little, then the system's not working. And I think that would run counter to what would be the impulse behind the whole thing. I don't see the folks operating a system paying too little. As an aside, I think that it turns out, you know, people think, well, doctors are getting paid too much, which possibly doctors are getting paid too much, but they're not really the biggest part of the expense. A doctor, most doctor salaries won't be too significantly impacted, I wouldn't expect. One good thing that happens to all healthcare providers is they don't have to spend time filling out forms. I mean, just both doctors and nurses spend an extraordinary amount of time with billing information, not with forms to provide healthcare, but just with billing information. And we free up their time to do what they're supposed to do, which is, and what they want to do, which is provide treatment to people, not to fill out billing forms, effectively be drafted into the model of unpaid service to the insurance companies. I have another question about the criticism that's come from the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, of Medicare for All, and whether I think that's a problem for us and how we overcome it. And the answer is I don't really think that is a problem. I would way prefer if Speaker Pelosi said that she's all in on Medicare for All. I'd also prefer if she said, I think this is the right thing, even if I don't think we're ready to do it right now politically. I think that is what she actually thinks. I think she probably does think it's the right policy. But the truth is, the Speaker is not moving legislation unless it has the strong majority support and the Democratic caucus. So it's not about her just controlling things, and if we could just, you know, get inside her head and flip a switch, it would magically happen. We have to build the support that we need among more members. We're over 100 members as co-sponsors of Medicare for All. We're going to need to get up to 200 before a Speaker Pelosi or any other speaker is willing to really start to move it forward. We're going to do that through this really deliberate organizing that's underway. Now, what is important is that we're able to get action in Congress, short of a floor vote. I would like a floor vote. I would like to have a floor vote even if we lost, and maybe we'll be able to force that, although it's going to require much more support. But we need other things going on. So this first hearing that took place was very consequential, not just because it was so emotionally moving as it was. I say that for those of you who aren't familiar with it, a longtime advocate for Medicare for All and economic justice, a guy named Adi Barkin, testified. Adi is young. I think he's 35. He has ALS. It's very advanced. He needs to have computer-assisted speech right now. He lives in California, and the trip he took to Washington, D.C. to testify at the hearing was the last trip across the country he's ever going to take. He does not have much more time. And he's both policy super knowledgeable, but now able to tell this heartbreaking first-person story about the need for Medicare for All and how even he, as someone who's got good insurance and who's an unbelievable advocate, able to advocate for himself, is running into all kinds of problems with health insurance. And to see him, anyone who saw him testify, I mean, if your eyes weren't tearing up, something is wrong with you. And I think it's going to be really, when we look back, a real turning point moment in the fight to win Medicare for All. But beyond the emotionality of that hearing, the fact of the hearing was a sign of the growing support for Medicare for All. We need the idea debated in hearings and examined by members of Congress who can question experts. We need a more focus on the challenges that are being raised to Medicare for All. That's how we drive this thing forward. So we're going to get, I think, now several more hearings, at least in this Congress. I think the idea will come up increasingly in hearings. And all of those things help us move the ball forward congressionally. In the meantime, we're going to do the work of adding more co-sponsors, both through our direct lobbying alone and in coalition, a coalition that is, I think, nicely continuing to expand, but also, and most importantly, through the grassroots effort. And again, that's the real heart of the strategy we're trying to push forward. Well, let me just take one more, or maybe two if I can squeeze it in, questions. Someone is asking the question about cost. What about cost? Isn't it in fact going to be impossible to pay for Medicare for All? And the short answer is no, it won't be impossible. I think we can do it at the same level of what we're spending on healthcare, or quite possibly with some savings as against what we're currently spending. The difference is we'll cover everyone fully and better than they're getting covered right now. And interestingly, even though there's a lot of, the attacks are rising on Medicare for All, including about cost, we're starting to get some consensus on that point. There's something at George Mason University, which is in Virginia, just outside of D.C. It has something called the Mercatus Center, which is like the lead fake think tank funded by the Koch brothers. And they did a study, and they put up this gigantic number about what the cost of Medicare for All would be. But then people said, yeah, hey, that's a big number because healthcare is really expensive. But you know what? It's about the same. It's actually a little bit less. Your projection is a little bit less than the cost would be to provide healthcare for every not to provide healthcare everyone, but to provide healthcare under the current system in which tens of millions of people are denied care altogether. And the guy conceded. So we're beginning to see some consensus on this idea that actually Medicare for All is not going to be more expensive than the current system. It's just going to be way better. Now, we're going to have to pay for it differently, so that's going to need to be worked out. But the most important thing is it more expensive? Can society afford it? And the answer is no, not more expensive, and therefore, yes, society absolutely can afford it. Let me just squeeze in one final question, which is just, if I can summarize it, it's raising some skepticism about the idea that we can win, given the immensity of industry support against what we're advocating for. You know, and that's a story about what we're trying to tell. So this is a big project. It's not going to be an easy win. It's not a small thing. We are taking on super powerful industries. Pharma alone is the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. And we're threatening them in very fundamental ways. So we know all of those things. But, you know, when I'm asked to talk about what public citizen is, what defines us, I have a lot of answers. But one of them that I like the most is that when we address policy questions, we start with what we think is right, not what people say is reasonable. We start with what we think is right, and then we find a way to make the right thing seem reasonable, and then to move from making it seem reasonable to winning it. And that's the trajectory that I think we're on with Medicare for All. And notwithstanding the power of the industry, I think we can do this thing. I think we have to invest in the right way. But this system is so broken, and so broken for so many people who feel it so deeply and are so passionate about delivering on the moral imperative of healthcare for everyone, of healthcare as a right. I believe that we, if we're strategic enough and savvy enough, that we can overcome those industry players. I think what we've given you is a plan to do that. Look, it's not going to be just public citizen. I mean, built into that plan is a recognition of how we have a strong coalition. I mean, we've seen just now formally endorsed at the news conference where we unveiled the current Medicare for All bill in the House. You know, we're delighted we were joined by the president, Randy Weingarten of the American Federation of Teachers. We're seeing new players come in a big way that hadn't been part of the effort in the past. And we're going to have to get way bigger than we are. But we think we here at Public Citizen, we have a plan to do things at a big scale to make a big difference and ultimately to drive forward to victory. And, you know, the alternative is really not acceptable. Many of you probably have these stories, or if you don't personally, you know someone who does, someone in your family, someone in your friends. The failures of our healthcare system, the financial pain it inflicts on so many people, the stupid and needless suffering for people who skip care, don't go to the doctor because it costs too much, don't get the treatment they need that they've been told by a doctor to get because it costs too much, don't take the pills they're supposed to take because they cost too much. The richest country in the world, we can't live like that. We can't accept that, and we're not going to accept that as a public citizen, and I'm totally confident if we work together, we can deliver on what we all know is the right thing to do, which we do through Medicare for All. Well, let me just wind down and thank you so much. I think I've got a couple of questions in the queue here, but I promised you 30 minutes. I'm already over. So I'll respond electronically to the questions I have. And again, you should feel free to email me directly now in the next half hour, or really at any time about this or anything else related to Public Citizen you want to talk about. It's rweisman@citizen.org. Let me again just thank you so much for all the support you give us. It is what drives us forward. We feel so indebted to you and inspired by you. And we're counting on you to help us do this thing at the scale that we need to do to win. Thank you all very much, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.